Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James.
The Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner.
What you got going on, my sexy Belafonte?
I'm into that, and I am also talking about, what am I talking about?
See, I got you all distracted.
I know you got me distracted. Well, okay, you know what? I know what we're talking about.
Yes, okay,
we're talking
about, she's back on.
Yes, I'm back on. how the writer's rooms on TV shows are not diverse, and how come... Why we do some investigative reporting. We dig into the statistics. We look at all of those numbers. What are you talking about?
Well, give me the clues. Give me the clues. And I'm rough right there. And we're going to switch it on over. After that, I feel like there's a lot of hurt and pain. You know, I am a healer. I just love to heal people. I am just taking the footsteps of Oprah Winfrey. And we are looking into Don Miguel Ruiz. One of those. Way to start the show.
Ruiz. Okay.
We're going to look at his book. It's a Minority Corner book review. And we're going to look at his book, The Four Agreements. And we're going to look at what it is that you're agreeing to. And if you follow these four agreements, you are going to live a happy, blissful, love-filled life. And if you're side-eyeing those things, you need to listen to this episode because we got to fix what you're agreeing to.
We got to fix it.
And we haven't asked Minority Corner anything.
Finally, it has happened to us. Someone asked us a question.
We're gonna answer it. Well, let's get into it, my lovely, sexy Belafonte.
Ditto. Let's go. Minority Corner.
Girl, you there?
I'm there. Are you there? Hello? Tap, tap, tap.
Yes, I am here. I am here and queer and ready to beer. Is that a thing?
I mean, how does one beer?
And you know what? I'm actually not beering right now. I am taking an alcohol sabbatical still. I went out with my friends who were visiting in town, didn't drink, and had a blast. And woke up fresh as a daisy the next day.
Look at you living that sober, straight edge life.
Ooh, look at me. I am a square and loving it.
I have been drinking.
Oh, yeah. She's been drinking. I know, because I got a text when you were like, ooh, I'm out.
I know. I couldn't even believe it. I went out to some fancy French restaurant with the Ladies of Nice Tam, which is the comedy group that I am involved with.
You were up in it. Aneke is slaying the comedy all day, every day up in Nice Tam.
You know, I'm trying to do what I could do.
She do it good.
By the way, performing in San Francisco Sketch Fest, if you're in the San Francisco area on January 26th, come check it out.
Yeah.
So we were out. I went to a French restaurant. I had me a glass of wine, and then I drove home. One glass of wine. Don't drink and drive, people.
Yeah, Aneke, I'm sorry, but you just raised some alarms with me. I'm glad
but
that you reiterated
I curbed it.
All I heard was glass of wine, then I drove. Like, I heard wine and driving, and I was like, wait a minute.
One glass.
Okay.
Uno.
I'd like to have an intervention with you right now here in front of the listeners. And I get worried because don't text and drive because it's just like drinking and texting.
Yeah, but I did not text.
Okay. But sometimes like I'll text Aneke and she's texting me and I'm like, but I know you're driving. And so then I try not to text you.
Then why do you keep... Okay, if we're doing an intervention, here's the other intervention. You'll be like, I hate you. Don't text and drive. And then you'll be like, here's another thought. Here's this other thought. No, don't respond. I'm mad at you. But here's this other one thing that I got to tell you about. And my phone is like, bling, 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 bling. And I have to just like turn it over so I don't look at it.
In my defense, Your Honor, I have gotten much better with recognizing that you're driving and then I will stop texting. What happens is, and I do this a lot, like I send out texts just because I have a thought in my head and I don't want to forget it. Not necessarily that I like want someone to respond to me right then and there, just like before I forget, here's this idea. But I get it.
No, you know. That is something that I've had to learn too, where if you text me or if anybody texts me, people can wait.
Yes, because remember back in the day, I would have been like, they'd have to wait a good while. I'm going to have to wait like a week for you to write a letter or something.
You left a message on a voicemail thing.
Yes.
And you were just like, oh, they'll hear it when they get home eventually, whenever that is.
And they'll get back to you at their earliest convenience, just like their message said.
Oh my God, you remember what people used to do that they cannot do anymore? I remember this all the time.
Background music?
No, well, there's that. Oh. But then also, people would say this on the answering machine. Pick up, I know you're home. Pick up. Nobody can do that shit anymore.
Yeah, because the voicemail has to be done all the way through.
Yeah, nobody's sitting there listening.
No, because you can't do that. So that's that. Miss Fitzclark Weaver.
It's just Fitzclark.
Okay. Oops, oop. Cut that out.
I love.
I don't know. I just want to address you. I want to come correct when I'm coming up to my co-host in arms. I want to come at you correct.
This is a good question, and I'm going to address it right now. I love my husband. I am married. And I was going to hyphen my last name. But you know what?
She was
going to
do it.
It's been over a year. I haven't done it. I've been dragging my feet. And I think I'm just going to stick with my curated last name.
Because I love your last name. I just want to go on the record. I don't know why I am trial. You know what? I've been watching so much How to Get Away with Murder. That's
you are just in the courtroom of life right now.
Talk. I'm like, Your Honor, can I go on the record and just say
this whole thing's on the record.
This whole thing is being crafted by Linda Tripp herself as if she is recording us at this very moment.
We are tripping ourselves.
Neke actually texted me the other day. She's like, you ready to Linda Tripp?
Yeah.
And if you don't know what that means, it's because Linda Tripp used to record the phone call conversations of Monica.
Yeah, Monica Lewinsky. If you don't know what that is, you are a young person.
And you know what? Enjoy your sweet baby life. Enjoy it. Because tough times ahead. But I love your name because your last name, because it's a collaboration of both of your parents made up your own last name. That's so dope.
Yeah, it's a hybrid name slapped together. I will save the privacy of my parents, but I'm sure you could probably figure out what one of the last names is and one of the other last names is.
Very true.
My last name is Fitzclark, and I don't feel like losing it. And I think if someone wants to take their husband's last name, more power to them. If somebody wants to just keep their last name, more power to them. If somebody wants a hyphen, do whatever you want to do. And I just found out the long procrastination way that I'm going to keep my last name.
what is that?
That procrastinated. I was like, I'm going to hyphenate. I guess I'm not.
done. Well, you know what, Aneke, what I would like to applaud you, because instead of just making a snap decision and then you would have been like a year later, like, wait a minute, I missed that. You waited it out. It's like, this is what I do. Like, when I go shopping, I don't buy something right away. I look at it, I see it, and I walk away, and then I decide if I want to go back and get it.
Yeah, I think that's smart shopping.
I'm a smart shopper. I'm not, I don't like to get up on these impulses. If my last name would have been hyphen, it would have been James Wharton.
Oh.
It would have been Wharton. It's not cute. Don't.
Okay.
That was like cute, interested one. You don't have to be. That is awkward. And thank you, parents, for not doing that. I appreciate you feigning interest.
Okay, I need to change topics real quick. Do you mind?
Yeah. Switch gears.
Okay, so we got a listener question.
Listener question. Uh-huh. They're asking minority anything.
Ah! Yeah. All right.
I gave
so
it
I'm
some
Moulin
Rouge at the end.
I like that. That was like a little bit of Christina, a little bit of
J-Hud. All the greats.
So from an anonymous listener letter.
Oh, we got an anonymous tidbit. An anonymous call.
Well, they're not anonymous, but I'm keeping them anonymous.
Okay.
So it goes, hi, Aneke and James. I love the podcast and love you guys. Thanks. We love you too. I have a question about my work. So I'm a cheese maker, which is a very male dominated industry. You learn something every day, I suppose.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Neither did I. I'm always the one female bodied person working at a time since there's only one other female cheese maker and we have different shifts. I really like the guys I work with, except for one thing. We have huge windows facing blank urban metropolis streets, and often keep on the privacy.
Just say metropolis. We'll say metropolis.
Okay, facing a metropolis street. So it's a busy
Good
street.
Call.
And often the guys comment on women walking outside. None of them have said anything about me to me, but the way they talk about women outside makes me really uncomfortable. My boss is a woman, but I'm not sure how to bring this up this sort of thing. I'd feel weird about saying something because it would so clearly be me complaining, and I don't want to cause problems in a relatively new workplace that I really like otherwise, and I don't want to ruin the friendships I've started making. Another layer is that all of the men I work with are Black and Latino, and I feel like me as a white female brings in a weird historical thing considering the crazy repercussions men of color have faced because of things to do with white women. I feel like a bad feminist by not saying anything since it's essentially catcalling even though the women can't hear them. Sorry, I know this was super long. It's not that long. I'm just really, conflicted.
Ooh, that brings up a lot of interesting points. And okay, what do you say?
First of all, thanks for the question.
Yeah, thank you. A really well thought out and processed question. Like, you really took me on a journey and stuff, and really like identified all aspects, because like I think like at everything, and we talked about this on the podcast, how, you know, complicated everything is. Like, we were talking about the Kevin Spacey thing last week. Right. Like, it's a lot of points and a lot of elements, and you really painted that full picture for us.
Yeah, definitely. So, one, you understand all the facets of the whole thing, which is great. Mm-hmm. Personally, what I would do, and I don't know how much you're into confrontation or, you know, all of that. If they're friends of yours, like, if you feel like you have a good, rapport with them, I would say that's not cool.
Yeah.
I would literally just say, you guys, that's not cool.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. It makes me feel uncomfortable. And if they're like, oh, what's wrong with you? Blah, blah, blah. You could be like, you know what? That sucks that you don't respect me like that.
Totally.
That sucks that you don't care about my feelings. And I know that sounds kind of like after school special, but sometimes you got to get that way with people. And they might not realize what they're saying is fucked up.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Mm-hmm. Another thing that I would point out is if it gets to the point where it's like super raunchy and lewd and gross and you're really uncomfortable, yes, complain to your boss. And you know what? It doesn't mean that it's you just because you're the other woman. For example,
it could have been some other guy who like stepped up and said something too.
Who's uncomfortable? I mean, recently in the library, there are two students that were being super loud, and then another student shushed them and everybody looked at me. I wasn't the one that shushed them.
You were like, it was not me.
Yes.
Don't blame the one sitting behind here helping you to get information.
Exactly.
Can't stop myself.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you're the one that complained.
I just wanted to jump on something because I think you're breaking these down in different steps and points. And I think you're right. I think the first step is to, if you can and do feel comfortable, or if you feel like you have the strength and courage, because I don't think it's about being comfortable. I think it's, do you have the courage to step forward and say something? Because it's got to be uncomfortable. Because stepping forward and saying things is always uncomfortable. And I think, you know, reaching back to the election and just where we're such creatures of comfort and we like to make ourselves very comfortable. And then what that ends up happening is we don't end up having these uncomfortable conversations. So just like what Aneke said, if you do have the courage to, something too that I've used, because I've even been struggled with this, like as a dude, like sometimes hearing guys I don't know saying things, like when I was on my way to Las Vegas, it was like these like older guys from Queens who were just being so awful. And I was like thinking, I was like, okay, what are those tips that Aneke once gave us? And I'm not feeling... And like, honestly, like also being, you know, a gay man, I don't necessarily feel as comfortable necessarily always stepping up to these, you know, bigger macho straight dudes or whatnot.
Right.
So I just sort of passive aggressively started just saying, Harvey Weinstein. Wow. Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein. Wow, that's very Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. Harvey Weinstein. So no one wants to be associated with that dude.
Right, especially right
so
now.
So there is a tactic of like, you know, and I know it's like, I'm not very pro passive aggressiveness, but that's where my courage led me to in that moment.
Yeah, I think definitely being vocal about it is the number one best step, be it direct or passive aggressive, because hearing it from you, one, this is how you feel. Two, like James just said, there might be another guy that's in that situation that is uncomfortable too, but because of toxic masculinity, he is forced to participate in it.
And it's work. You should feel like this is not what work is supposed to be about. Like your journey as a woman has been challenging enough, and to get where you are in a place that you really enjoy, and now this bullshit,
right?
Like you owe it to yourself, and you deserve to have a comfortable and free workspace. And if you do bring it up to your boss, like maybe it sounds to me like they need a workshop. So even just it could be an educational moment of like, hey, I think we need to have some sort of a team workshop of that breaks down. There's probably other issues and stuff too that they if they're doing this sort of behavior, this is a gateway drug to other biases.
That sucks. That fucking sucks. Like,
there's probably some homophobia.
I know that you like literally told us that they're your friends and they're nice guys and everything. Then one, mm-mm, that should mean that they should be able to listen to you. Two, fuck that. No nice guy would talk about another woman's ass in front of a woman. They shouldn't even do that without a woman present.
Exactly.
Like, that is not kosher. That's disgusting. Yeah. So. Yeah. I think just calling them out, depending on your relationship, if I was like buddy-buddy with them, I would be like, fuck you, fuck that, and then be like, that's disgusting. And then if they go like, oh, but you could talk about dicks or whatever, we don't care, you could be like, it doesn't matter about you, it matters about the respect that you have for me. Use that line. Mm. Because they're going to be like, if you talk about my butt, I don't care. If you talk about that guy's dick, whatever, but, I don't care.
And it's not
like
the
it's
same
not about
because...
you.
And it, because this language, again, words have power, and this language and behavior leads into these giant epidemics that we're seeing in Hollywood, in DC, about these men with power and how they use power and objectify women. It's like it just trickles down to all of these things. So you do have an opportunity, and I think that you know that you want to do something, and that's why you emailed us, and we really appreciate this dialogue, because I'm sure you're not alone. There's people like... Fuck, you walk outside the door and everyone's battling this toxic masculinity shit. I open up my computer and I see it, you know, like we're all battling it.
I mean, truth be told, I had to call a man on the floor recently about this. Like someone talked about a woman's butt in front of me and I literally said, that's not cool. You can't do that. And they were like, why? And I said, no, it's not appropriate. So there you go. So it's kind of women, men, it's this whole system that we have set up that we have to deal with, and by nipping it in the butt like this, like James says, it's going to be uncomfortable, but usually that's where growth comes from.
Absolutely, from being courageous and stepping forward. So we applaud you in being a Wonder Woman and stepping forward and doing your part to end this toxic masculinity bullshit.
Fuck yeah, make that cheese too.
Oh yeah, make that cheese. And you know what? You know who loves cheese? Minority Corner, just saying.
This is a cheese podcast.
This is a cheese podcast. Not cheesy, but we love the cheese. And okay, I would like to just touch on something real quick before we get into the corners, because I wasn't going to talk about this in my corner. Just a little bullet point that was forgotten in the news that I think a lot of people have not heard about. This one just broke. It broke my heart. It just broke my heart to hear this and see this. And I know there's a lot of beautiful things happening in the world, but there's a lot of like why what we do is so important. A young black kid was shot and killed by his father. He's 14 years old because he was gay.
Oh my God.
His name is Giovanni Melton. And his father shot and killed him because he was gay. And
this
so,
is horrific.
I mean, this shit is still, you know, happening again. Like the LGBT community is overrepresented in the youth homeless. I think 40% of the homeless youth population are LGBT. And, you know, it's one thing for kids to be kicked out of their homes, but like this kid is 14 years old.
Murdered.
His life was ended because of his father's own fear.
Fear.
His own fear. Fear. So again, this goes back to like the conversations that we have are so important. You know, perhaps if there was someone else that was along the lines about to talk to him, this father, about, you know, everything's in your head. These fears that you're having are in your head. So like even going back to what our anonymous tip person was, I think that like breaks down to everything of why we have to be courageous and have these conversations and break these things down, because you don't even know the ripple effect of the lives that you will be saving down the line.
It's so true. Oh my God, you're speaking the truth right there, because I think the ripple lines is the biggest thing. Like when you hear a story that touches you in a certain way, it colors your life in an amazing different thing. So something that could just be a passing comment, a passing gesture, really can save a life. So, you know, my heart goes out to Giovanni, because it's like oy, 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 like just living his truth. gotta it's murder. True.
At such a young age, like, I wasn't able to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah.
The journey that, so just heartbreaking, and there's still so much more work to be done out there. And again, those of us within the community, in the LGBT community and outside, but specifically in the LGBT community, we have to, how are we being there for our young brothers and sisters who are in these fucked up households who are not able to love them the way that they need to be? So yay, everybody can get married, but fuck, our children are dying and being disowned. So throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Well, Aneke, so we get up into your... I want in. Just let me in your corner, Aneke.
Are,
I am crying. My
corner is primed and ready. We're about to talk about more TV and race, but you know what? We need to uncover why and how we got to this point.
I'm coming over.
Let's do it.
I got a meeting in the writer's room. I'll be back real soon. TV, it's so racist.
I told you I got you. That was good. I'm very impressed. Okay, so let's
what
let's
are we
just
doing in the
writer's
room?
It.
Are we talking about Becky?
Okay,
let's get in.
2 weeks ago, I talked about up-and-coming shows that feature people of color.
You did, and I marked my TiVo that I don't have, but if I did, I would have marked it.
TiVo? Does anybody have TiVo anymore? Poor TiVo.
I don't know what kids... what are the kids using? I have a laptop and Hulu and Netflix. That's what I got.
I use Xfinity. My cable comes with
a
DVR.
Look at you!
I'm a grown woman.
Keeping up with the Joneses. I'm trying, but I am falling behind.
I got all my shows to watch. Too many. So remember I was reading through The Hollywood Reporter, and I was like, ooh, this is white. not a lot of people of color at all. Mm-hmm. So Color Lines came out with an article called... 5 Ways Hollywood Sidelines Black Screenwriters, which is written by Samir Rao. And Samir Rao basically uses this one study that was done by The Color of Change, by a research study by Darnell Hunt, Dean of Social Sciences at UCLA.
Oh, you know this legit.
Mm-hmm. And it's called Race in the Writer's Room. So I'm going to give links to both of them because I basically used both of those articles. So I looked at the original article because Samir Rao had some good things to say. And then also there were some extra things that was in the Color of Change's research study. And it's this really graphic kind of infographic. So check it out because it's fascinating.
Thank you, librarian, for giving us that research.
You're welcome. I'm trying to do the best I can do.
You be doing it.
Okay, so there's 5 points and I'm going to break it down. So basically the study considered 1,678 first run episodes from all 234 of the original scripted comedy and drama series airing or streaming on 18 broadcast, cable, and digital platforms during the 2016-17 season.
Damn, that's a lot of shows.
Yeah, so they surveyed a lot of shows and the season just is ending. So this is some good research. This is quality stuff that we can look into.
Well, this is from last season, 2016 to 2017. So that went from the fall to May of last year.
Oh, got it. So it's past and over with. So things might be different, but...
So like Scandal season 6, not 7. Just so we can speak on the same dialogue.
So we're clear.
We're talking How to Get Away with Murder season 3, not season 4.
Yeah, you're adjusting yourself to...
What year am I in? Where am I? Which Olivia Pope wig is it? I'd be seeing that her wig. We'll talk about that later, but...
We'll also talk about why we only talk about How to Get Away with Murder and Scandal as our, black shows, too, because...
Whew, yeah! Because
not
I,
a lot.
There's not a lot for us to get to watch.
And there's a reason behind it, which we're going to find out. So, number one, fully 65.4% of all TV series writers' rooms, so the writers' room, which is basically the room of writers that write for the specific show, 65.4% have no black writers.
Wait, 65.4%? There's no black writers at all. That's a lot of shows that have, no... Yes. Black voices on them.
That's well over half.
That's a lot. They're like, black who? And they're like, oh,
exactly.
Wow.
And then just to add to that, 17.3% have one black writer.
Wait a minute. Damn. That means we do not have a lot of seats at the table. That means that a lot of the media that we're consuming doesn't have black voices in it.
Exactly. So
they're
just
probably
to go
all
further.
On Scandal.
Yeah. Yes, basically. AMC stands out as having the worst inclusion problem overall. Both women and people of color, so they exclude both women, people of color, in their showrunners and their writers. To continue with that, 90%+ of shows have one or no black writers, and that includes Netflix, Amazon, CW, and CBS. So Netflix, Amazon, CW, and CBS, 90%+ of their shows has either one or none black writers.
Okay.
And then 100% of the shows in Hulu, AMC, Showtime, or TBS have either one or none black writers.
I literally want to take my chair and just like smash it on the ground. Like, it's taking all of my composure. And now I'm not upset that I walked away from The Walking Dead. And The Walking Dead will fool you because they'll put a bunch of black folks on there, but there are no black writers. No black
either
voices.
Either one or none.
Which means it comes down to hat goes off to the casting directors then. Because the casting directors must be making an effort to make sure those shows are not all white. Which Shonda Rhimes led the charge in that back with Grey's Anatomy and helped ABC change the way that does all of its casting.
And also I want to point out, since we're going to move on to number two, you brought up the key person, Shonda Rhimes, black showrunner. So a showrunner is somebody who is in charge of the whole show. Like Shonda Rhimes with Shondaland, she's the showrunner. So she is in charge of the writers. She's in charge of, like, the showrunner runs the show, basically.
Yeah, like in TV, in the movies, it'll be the director who kind of runs the whole entire show. But in TV land, it's, like you said, the showrunner, the head writer, showrunner.
So, number two, showrunners, the people most responsible for hiring writings, are 91% white.
Mm-hmm.
91% of showrunners are white.
But I'm not surprised. I'm more bothered by that statistic, but not surprised.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of this should come as no surprise. But it also, one thing leads to the other. So right here, 69% of these showrunner programs, of these showrunners program, so the 91% that are white, 69% of those shows feature no black writers.
See, that makes sense. I see where that's coming from.
You get it?
I
see
the
pattern.
See
where I'm getting to.
I see the clue. Look at you, Blue's Clues and Me.
Yeah,
I
I'm
see
just
the clue.
Dropping little tidbits. Because, first and foremost, if you got a white showrunner, they are less likely to hire black writers. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's going to be less black characters. Therefore, less like roles for black people to play. So there is the crux of it all. It comes from the top.
Yeah. Well, and I could also see it too, because they would also. I see this other sort of weird sort of neo-white liberalism, this other faction of it, where they're like, well, I don't want to write for a black voice because that would be, you know, tokenism or something. So I just won't include them at all. So then they're just not there at all.
That sounds like a Lena Dunham to me.
Right.
Which
like,
means
no
black people.
Which means we're just not in it at all. Instead of going out of your way and saying, and why wouldn't you want different... To me, it makes sense that if I'm building a team, I want people who are different than me, because I want to bring different perspectives and different ideas, as opposed to it seems like a lot of people bring in people who are like them, and then and that's all their stories are.
And then here you go. You're bringing up my point right now. 100% of shows that are run by a black person include white writers.
Of course. Of course.
I know.
Because we just, that's how we yeah, of course, yeah, that's how we do.
Mm-hmm. So there's that.
So like, wait, so that's like all of the shows. So like even like Queen Sugar has white writers on it.
Of the ones that they looked at.
Okay.
Remember, they didn't specify which ones, but just to remind everybody, this study considered 234 of their original scripted comedy and drama series airing on streaming on 18 broadcast cable or digital platforms.
Right. And I think so there's other shows, of course, that weren't on there. I think because Shonda said that last year there were 400 shows were aired last year or something within that time period.
Yeah.
So we don't know if Queen Sugar was maybe on that list, which I hope that they did look at that.
I would think so.
Or if I'm Being Mary Jane, because she's on her last leg.
Yeah, I don't know. know. If somebody wants to look deeper into the article, that would be awesome. I know that they interviewed the showrunner.
So that means Empire has white writers. You know they looked at Empire.
I think they did the major networks for sure. They did
Blackish. So that means I'm just kind of like going through my Rolodex of like the amazing.
I know you're
black
like
shows
yelling like, shows oh. at me right now.
I'm investigating too. I'm Blue's Clues in it. I know. I'm getting the clues. I'm sniffing it out.
So,
sorry.
So of the shows that they were looking at, 100% of the shows run by black people included white writers. But it just proves the point that black people are more inclusive. And then also it is like radical if you have an all black room than it is when you just throw in a couple of white people. We're more likely to include than white people are to include us.
Which at the same time, I would also like to see a writer's room that is just black folks.
We'll get to
because
that.
Because I think there is... Oh, okay.
Okay. Right. So...
I'm sitting back down.
We'll get to that.
I'm on the magic school bus and I'm sitting my ass down.
Enjoy the ride. by the way, side note. Yeah. Did you know what Betsy DeVos dressed as for Halloween?
Ugh, I forgot. What was it?
Motherfucking Miss Frizzle. Like an insult to all of us. She does not... Don't you dare dress up like that educational icon, Miss Frizzle.
Icon of who is a firm believer in public school.
Yes.
Miss Frizzle was given these kids. And you know these kids at that school, sidebar, you know those kids at that school were going to like a very sort of like not well-funded
because
school, which is why
she took them on adventures.
Twofold. No. She had to because the school curriculum was not good. So she was like, well, fuck, I got to get these kids. If they're going to have a life, I got to
like,
save these
fuck
kids.
This star testing, standardized testing. I'm going to shrink this fucking bus down and we are going to go
out
on a blood cell and see what we
that.
Can
we
see.
We're inside of a cat.
I know.
You're right. We are off to the moon today because they just cut science.
Yeah, I know.
So Betsy DeVos, take it off.
Take it off.
Take it off.
Okay, so going back, number
three.
Put
something back on because I don't want to see that.
I don't want to see you naked. Okay, so number three. Writers' rooms with one black writer tokenize and diminish their contributions. So I want to take a little sidestep from these two research things because I listened to a really interesting podcast recently. I want to promote it.
Minority Corner?
Well, I mean, I love that one. Of course, you're listening to it right now.
It's good.
A good one. But this one is called Revisionist History. It's by Malcolm Gladwell. Ooh. He's the one that wrote The Tipping Point and Outliers. He's excellent.
Yes.
I love him.
Yes, yes. So that is on my Amazon book list.
Ooh, you listen to his podcast, James. Okay, so.
Okay, I'm subscribing.
The very first podcast, the very first episode of season one, he has two seasons now, I was re-listening to it. So basically, I'll read the thing. So it goes, The Lady Vanishes, which is the title of the very first podcast of Revisionist History episode, explores the world of art and politics to examines the strange phenomenon of token, the outsider whose success serves not to alleviate discrimination, but perpetuate it. If a country elects a female president, does that mean that the door is now open for all women to follow? Or does that simply give the status quo the justification to close the door again? So I wanted to bring this up because Malcolm Gladwell brings up a good point where a lot of the time the majority will let in a person who is not represented. And I'm being very broad right now because it happens in all walks of life.
Oh yeah, you can insert marginalized group here.
Yeah. And then they'll be like, oh, yay, good for us. Now we can just continue to keep hiring the same that we did before. And that is exactly what happens in the writer's rooms with one black writer. So they'll let one black writer in and they'll be like, you're the voice of all the black people of the show. But we're just going to keep, yay for us. We did it. We're so awesome. Yeah. And then they keep hiring white writers. And so that doesn't actually help to create diversity within the writing room.
Mm-hmm.
So that phenomenon is happening right now. And definitely listen to that podcast because it is amazing. He talks about all the different things. He talks about this woman that tried to get into an English artist society. He talks about Australia's first female prime minister. He talks about... Jewish people in Europe. He talks about, he does all of this in like fucking 30 minutes. Malcolm Gladwell really.
Whoa, damn. I know. I'm taking notes on that. How he do that in 30 minutes?
I know. So
well, we got two corners to cover. We do. You know.
I know. So I'll keep it moving. Also, I'll put that link in there.
Oh, yes, please. Por favor.
Okay. So number four, networks, diversity programs don't ensure Black writers' careers prospects. So I'll just read this one directly from the Color Lines article. Now, it says, the report noted that every major network except for CBS has a diversity program.
Wait, except for CBS? Yes. Sorry. Well, I am not surprised. Well, you know what? I'm glad you mentioned this because that explains it, of why there's such a lack of Black folks up on CBS specifically. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, continue. I mean, you get it. They're not even breadcrumbs anymore. They're boulders. Okay, so... So the report notes that every major network except for CBS has a diversity program that subsidizes the hiring of writers of color. But as one Black writer explained, that subsidy often allows showrunners to hire one person of color just to keep up appearances. The writer didn't know he was hired through the diversity program until his showrunner told him he was actually going to start costing the production money now that he had been on staff for over two seasons, and they needed to find another person of color who would be cheaper.
Whoa. Wait, instead of just keeping him on staff, so like he's literally, like you said, to go back, just there to keep up appearances. Yep. So you can just like, and what you literally are saying, the subtext is, so we can hire more white people. Mm-hmm. Like instead of like, why would you not want to hire
exactly
another person of color? If they're not good, then that's fine.
Right.
Get rid of them and go hire someone else who's good.
Hello.
My mind just cannot wrap around this. And something, mm-hmm. too, that Ashley Black, who writes on Full Frontal, was saying is right. that also, like, access to submitting, like, she said that she had never even submitted a packet before, a writer's packet.
Right.
She didn't know what that process was. And so not even having the right access from mentors to even, for one, know where those doors are, and then how to fucking, like, open the door. Like,
right?
In terms of, like, your package being how to open up the door. Like, how do I do this?
Exactly. It's just all of these fucking leaps and bounds that we're constantly going over, and it's really disheartening to find out that something that's supposed to help with diversity is actually being twisted in a gross way by these showrunners. Once again, mm-hmm. I need to reiterate, starting from the top, it's just out of control.
And they're mostly white dudes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Number five, 2/3. 66.6% of writers' rooms hired by Black showrunners feature five or more Black writers. So that means that if you have a Black showrunner, more than likely they're going to hire more Black writers, which means that your writers' room is going to be more beneficial to a diversity of voices. So I really wanted to highlight this because going back to what you said before, basically this is why it's incredibly important to have diversity at the top, because it ensures that there are writers of color that get a seat at the table and therefore will paint a better, more intricate picture of a diverse population, instead of just like the Seinfeld effect where whenever a minority comes on screen, it's like a stereotype. So to highlight that, I wanted to quote Donald Glover. So his show Atlanta, which was on the FX,
didn't it win some Emmys?
It won hella Emmys. He is just applauded for being amazing. He had Black women directors. He had an Asian man director. Basically, his writing staff was all Black for the first season of Atlanta. Ooh. It was an all Black writing staff. And this is what he has been quoted as saying. He said this to Vulture, which is the New York Magazine's online component. So he said, FX initially suggested that a drug dealer character live in a trap-like apartment. We were like, no, he's a drug dealer. He makes enough money to live in a regular apartment. There are some things
as they do.
There are
they make money.
Yeah, there are some things so subtle and Black that people had no idea what we were talking about. I wanted to show white people you don't know everything about Black culture, he says. So basically, to that end, Glover employed an entirely Black writing staff, and on top of them being entirely Black, most of them were from Atlanta. So Atlanta native. Ooh. So that just adds another layer on top of it. Because one thing that people don't realize is I'm a different black person than you're a different black person. Yes.
Well, I would be like me writing for Atlanta.
I don't know.
I would be the wrong show.
Exactly.
I would be the wrong voice for that show.
Right. There's only so many things that you can do. Like, I understand what it is to be a black woman in the world, but I'm also from California. I'm also from the Bay Area. I was raised in a certain way. Instead of just having a token effect where it's one view, you need to have diversity to really understand what your show is coming from. And like you said, James, Atlanta won Emmys. People love that show across the board, no matter who you were, because it just painted a good picture of a population that is diverse and beautiful and interesting. And that's what happens when you actually curate your writer's room well.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? What's so interesting is that this show, Atlanta, for him to take, that's a huge leap and quote unquote risk from like the network's perspective, that they had this whole entire all black writer's room. That show had to do well and win awards. Otherwise, you know, they would have yanked it or gutted it and said, well, this doesn't work. You know, like, whereas I feel like, you know, white dudes specifically can you know, fall or fail and get more and more opportunities. Even like things like, you know, Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman had to be a success for her to get another opportunity to be able to direct again, you know, whereas like white dudes can fail left and right and still get more opportunities.
Right. But I, yes. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I guess I don't. Wait, what? What's... Why are we not syncing up?
We're confused. Syncing up. I think I was just really, I was excited to hear about the success of having a diverse, like an all black writing room. And I don't know. I think, yeah, it had.
I'm championing that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that is amazing. And I'm just saying the other side of it is that like it also had to be successful and amazing. Otherwise it would have been killed.
Well, just basically, I mean, I get what you're saying, and that's I think that we're at the same point, but just in different viewpoints. Like in terms of, I was kind of hoping that would be a positive conclusion, where I feel like in the inclusion by setting up your writer's room to have specific voices that cater to the show. Yeah, one. If it were mediocre, it would have been pulled immediately. But two, I think because it was so curated that there's a higher chance of it being excellent.
Mm, yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like it ensures a better voice. Like if Walking Dead, for instance, had like, you know, actually hired some black people.
Or then some zombies.
Right, stop it.
Or people from the South.
Yeah, it would have a better voice. You know, it wouldn't be so forced.
Well,
so.
And you know what they also would have done in The Walking Dead if there was a black writer on there? Mm-hmm. The black, like, there would have been a conversations amongst, like, the two black ladies about, like, how are you keeping your hair like this, girl? There would have been that moment, you know, because, like, the world has ended, and I'm like, but how is she keeping her dreads so tight? Like,
I guess,
how is she doing that?
As like, a black woman, if there's zombies, I don't care about my hair.
Well, it just would have been, I feel like there could have been a moment to even, like, to have that. Like, in How to Get Away with Murder, like, we see her take off her wig, you know? They make comments about that. She takes off her lashes.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Well, definitely, let's start stacking the deck and putting more diversity in writers' rooms and in showrunners from the top down, because that is super important. Because it's just a ricochet effect.
Yeah. I'm also going to put in the show notes a great conversation that Shonda Rhimes did with a woman from the TED Talks, just about it goes right in line with a lot of what it is that you're talking about. And Shonda Rhimes has really been such a pioneer in changing up the TV industry and the way it is now.
Definitely. Awesome. So you guys read up, and if you have somebody that works in Hollywood, set them right. James, it's your corner.
It's the Minority Corner Book Club.
Oh.
We're back in the Minority Corner Book Club.
Well, I mean, only one of us read the book, though, does that?
It's still a club. You can listen to me talk about the book.
Okay.
We do it differently here on Minority Corner. It's a little different.
Let me know.
I made some... I talked about this. I brushed on this, I said that I was reading this book, and Aneke teased me for reading this book. And we talked about this in a few other episodes, because you looked at the cover, and you said it looked like a very much of a mom book that I was reading.
I say things that I don't mean off the cuff.
And if moms are reading this book, then more power to them, because not only should moms be reading this book, everybody, I think, would benefit from this book. It is called The Four Agreements. It's a practical guide to personal freedom, Toltec wisdom book. So this is by Don Miguel Ruiz, I'm trying to think how Oprah pronounced it. He was just on Oprah's new podcast. He was early on. Oprah has a podcast that I just fucking discovered, and it's amazing. It's called Super Soul Sunday Conversations. Yeah. So good. And this writer was on, and I highly recommend the episode, because you can read the book and also get insights from him about this practice. He has written, over 18 different books. This book in particular was a New York Times bestseller for over 8 years. It sold over 6 million copies, translated into 40 different languages, and it's based on the traditions of the ancient Toltecs that lived from 900 to 1168 CE. What is the CE business? What is that?
Criterion
era?
I think it's like the non-religious way of saying BC.
It's the new BC. New BC. Okay, all right. That's what I thought. I was like, did we make another new period? Are we in a new thing?
No.
And so this is, it's an ancient Mexican tradition that was in believed to even influence some of the Aztecs. So this is like ancient ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. And it was passed down from Don Miguel for generations. And essentially what the Four Agreements talks about is that we all are making agreements. So as we go through this, I want you to think about what is it that you are agreeing to, that we are constantly making agreements every day. And most of them are not ones that are going to help us love ourselves and love each other. Ooh. So Don Miguel says that whenever we hear an opinion and believe it, we are making an agreement, and it becomes part of our belief system. So you're constantly making new agreements. And some of these are thoughts that you don't even realize that you are agreeing to. They are secretly lying dormant in your life. And it begins through these agreements that we make. We essentially start domesticating ourselves. It begins early on through agreements and rules that we learn from parents, teachers, other kids, adults, the media. And we essentially prime ourselves into being good boys and girls through these agreements that we are then learning.
Oh, interesting.
And so then over time, we essentially learn to live our lives based on these agreements that came from opinions that were not of our own. And that were then, and everybody, and think about this, it's generations and generations of people agreeing to things that are passed down that secretly people are like, I don't fucking really want to agree to this. It's these lies and these opinions that we keep passing down to each other and agreeing to them. Because as Don Ruiz says, that we are already born perfect. So as we go through this, you'll kind of, when I'm talking about agreements, you'll sort of see what it is that I'm talking about. It's not like the agreements of like be nice to each other. It's not sort of that, but the agreements of you're a woman and you're inferior. Right? Like these are certain thoughts that get into people's heads, and that you spend so much of your life trying to fight against these thoughts that are subconsciously still there. And he talks about how we're actually all stuck in a dream, which is essentially like a nightmare. So we're stuck in this sort of like dream world because it's all of these agreements that are not really based on truth and reality. And we're not really living in the reality world because we're so in our heads. We're so much in our heads that it's a dream world. And he says, if you live in a past dream, you don't enjoy what is happening right now because you will always wish it to be different than it is. There is no time to miss anyone or anything because you are alive. Not enjoying what is happening right now is living in the past and being only half alive. This leads to self-pity, suffering, and tears. So when we spend so much of our time in our head, that's what he's talking about, which is the dream world. And again, a lot of these things that are in our head are these agreements and ideas that we have agreed to, but they're not the real reality.
So are you like talking about something like the patriarchy?
Sure. I mean, this is like everything. The agreements can be all kinds of things that we are constantly making in our lives. So what are you buying? What belief systems have you bought into? Even if it's one that you are actively fighting against, is an agreement like somewhere along the line, I bought that there was something wrong with me because I'm gay, right? So even if you're fighting against it, somewhere along the line, you agreed to it.
And how it gets ingrained into you.
And you're fighting against it. Because like we said, you know, it's in our media, right? It's in the TV. It's from interactions with friends as a kid when we got picked on or teased on and how we also perpetuate them. So let me break it down to what are the four agreements. He says, essentially, if you follow these four, if you make these four agreements with yourself, you're going to live a happy, blissful, love-filled life.
Okay.
So the first one is be impeccable with your word. And what he means by that is he breaks it down to this definition of what it means to be impeccable with your word. It means speak with integrity. Say only what you mean. Avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. So and he talks about this on the podcast with Oprah. He says, like, if you follow this one, you're so incredibly set. Also meaning, like, what are the judgments and thoughts, like the words in your head as well. So the judgments that you say to yourself, about others, that are constantly just sort of running into your head. It goes back to like the golden rule of like, you know, not, I don't think that's the golden rule, but like saying nice things about other people, because words have power, right?
Right.
There was that demonstration of like the people said really, really mean and nasty things to a potted plant, and those plants like withered and died. And the ones when they started saying really nice things to the other plants, they blossomed and turned, you know, into a beautiful plant. Or maybe it was rice.
Secret stuff. I know what you're talking about.
So if you start here with the words that you're saying outward to other people, and also the words that you're saying to yourself, that's why affirmations are so incredibly helpful. The words that you say not only to yourself but about to other people as well. He says the quote that we judge others according to our image of perfection as well, and naturally they fall short of our own expectations. So he really talks about, and like also being impeccable with your word, I would also translate that into keeping your word to yourself and others. I think we can be so hard on ourselves because our word sometimes doesn't mean anything, because we say that we're going to do something and then we don't. And a lot of it is people we say yes to so many things and we're not saying yes to ourselves, and we spread ourselves so thin. So, you know, a part of what is going to strengthen your word is promising less and doing more. You know, I love when Shonda Rhimes says saying no to others is saying yes to yourselves.
Yeah, that's so true, especially at work.
And if you can strengthen your word for yourself and what that means, it's gonna help you to strengthen your words being impeccable. You know, and many of us have given, like I said, giving up faith on our word and what that means. And we're essentially living in, if so many people are not being impeccable with their words, and we're, you know, saying, I mean, if it goes back to what our listener was saying, like those are not men who are being impeccable with their words. They're saying mean, like nasty things that are degrading towards women, and that's not helping her, right? And so that's just one example of how we're living in this world of so many people not being impeccable with their words. And a lot of these are just lies. A lot of these, like you said, the patriarchy is built on a world of lies.
It's not divinity. It isn't like natural science. It's just somebody thought this was the way it should be, and then people followed it.
People agreed to those systems, you know? And so it's like we're now having to try to unpack those agreements, right? And it's like a daily struggle to say, I'm not going to agree to this. Like anytime you're having self-doubt in your mind, that is you agreeing to something, to a fear that you can't do that or you're not good enough, right? What this is doing is saying to turn that around. What are you agreeing to? Saying, I don't agree to that. I can do this. I am going to be successful. I am talented. I am enough. So being impeccable with your words can help to fight these stereotypes, which are lies, essentially, to empower other people and to lessen the power of other people. The second one, don't take anything personally. That's the second agreement. So nothing others do is because of you. what other people say and do is a projection of their own reality, their own dream. Because remember, we're all in our own sort of dream world that we're in. And when you are immune to the opinions and actions of others, you won't be the victim of needlessly suffering. So I love this one. Like, because like so much of like things, it's like it's so not about you. Anybody's attitudes or something that like you, you know, if they're angry at you, it has nothing to do with you and has some more to do with their own struggle that's going on inside of them. Because we're all dealing with our own, you know, battling our way through this sort of dream world, right? According to Ruiz.
I like that it goes hand in hand with the first one. So you need to be conscious on what you're saying and then also conscious on what you are hearing.
Yes. And I love, exactly that. Because then you can kind of filter out what someone's saying and really, because like we can, if you take it so personally, it allows you to like, if you don't take it personally, it's like you've got a shield and you're like, okay. And and you don't let it inside of you where it can then affect you and then it will affect you possibly being impeccable with your own words and self-talk inside of the words that you're saying for yourself, you know? Everyone's caught up in their own journey. So it's like someone who hates black people, that's their issue. It's not mine.
Right. That's
I can't stress myself out about it or, you know, someone's attitudes about homophobia. So if something hurts you, though, I would say it's an opportunity to kind of take a look and say, like, oh, why does that hurt me? And then it's an opportunity to heal that, right? Because it's an opportunity that, oh, there's still some healing. You know, like, I used to really get offended if someone were to call me stupid because I associated that with the, I felt like I had to represent all the race of black folks so high and so well, right? So I took it, for me, calling me stupid, it was almost like a racist thing. And because it's there's that agreement that, again, even I'm fighting against this agreement, it's still there in my head, which is why I had to try to fight it, that black folks aren't intelligent. And so someone calls me stupid, and instead of taking it personally, and if it does hurt me, it allows me to have an opportunity to sort of heal that and realize that, okay, that's on them, but let me heal this insecurity that I have where I wasn't being impeccable with my words and I was agreeing to something that I don't want to agree to and that I gotta awaken myself from.
Nice.
So I mean, this sort of, and we're going to lead into the next one here, but essentially when I was reading this, I was realizing, and I've been seeing this a lot from people after, you know, growing on this book, that so many people are guided by so much fear, which we talked about this on the podcast. I mean, fear is, it's from fear grows anger.
Yes. We talk about that all the time.
Which is addictive. Also from fear, there's could be a lot of victim blaming, which we love to do. Like it's so easy to go into that. And so it's opportunity to look behind your own anger or sadness or jealousy. Because a lot of times, like I find myself, if I'm angry or sad or jealous, the root of that is fear. There's some sort of fear there, like that I'm not enough, or that they are not going to like me, or that I'm running late and everyone's going to hate me, or I'm going to, you know, get fired from my job or something, right? Like these are just it's so based on fear. One quote that Ruiz, one of the two, what Don Miguel says.
Let us know, audience.
They will. He says the big difference between a warrior and a victim is that the victim represses and the warrior refrains.
Oh, interesting.
So I like that because it's like, you know, it's not saying don't feel the emotions. It's like feel them.
Yeah, and then you can't help it. We're not robots.
But the goal is to not then take it out on someone else because then...
Oh, I love that.
Then that would then send them into then the challenge of if I come yelling at you, then you're going to have to deal with, you know, trying to not take things personally, da-da-da-da. Like, right. I can stop that cycle right then and there.
Exactly.
Number three. I love this one. I love number three. Oh, my Lord. Do I love number three. Don't make assumptions.
Ooh, when you make an assumption, you make an ass, you and Munchkins.
And the Munchkins. and the assumptions. Yeah, those poor umptions. And so he breaks it down this way. He says, find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama.
Yeah,
I've clearly been listening to Oprah's podcast.
Get out of that drama mentality.
With just this one agreement, you can completely transform your life. Because yes. our brains, again, we're so caught in the dream. We spend so much time in our heads that we're making assumptions. It's I think, a survival mechanism to try to keep us safe, because our brains are constantly just trying to look out for things that are going to harm us. We have, I heard someone talk about this recently, our brain is the same model that has existed for like 100,000 years or something, right?
It has. Yeah, it's our lizard brain.
Yeah, it's there to help us run away from lions. And since there's not lions for us to have to use our brain power to like survive from, it's now looking at everything else as possible threats. So going against our primitive brain, and that's our negative bias, which again, it's there for a reason, but now it's time to evolve past that. And so instead of filling that brain space with assumptions, like you just don't know. And sometimes I find myself like, I use that, like, the don't take it personally and don't make assumptions. I come back to this one all the time. Like, you know, I'll create all kinds of a story about, you know, what so-and-so is thinking and da-da-da-da. And I'm like, wait a minute.
You don't know.
I don't know. I'm assuming all of this. And a lot of it is because I'm trying to keep myself safe. I'm trying to protect myself from it, from being hurt, which, again, comes down to fear. So I'm now being guided by fear.
Right. I really wanted to bring up a point that coincides with this. Our bodies are ancient bodies that were developed to consume calories, because if you found something that was fatty, you needed to eat it, because who knows when you're going to get
eat
it
again.
Another time.
Yeah.
So now we have so much access to food that we still desire those calories, but instead we limit the consumption of calories because we now know that we're not in a boom or bust type of thing.
Gotcha.
So we need to reprogram our brains in order to think like we're not in a fear and flight type of mode anymore. And the categories are simply there to look out for fear when we don't have to look for fear anymore.
Yeah, we're in our thoughts and our imagination so much, again, as a survival thing, but your brain, it can, your imagination can do two different things. It can either create anxiety and fear.
Ooh, no thanks.
Which I think, but a lot of us do spend time in that space, or it can create dreams and ideas, prosperity, abundance, succeeding. And what is, and so create anxiety is connected to fear, and creativity, dreams, ideas, prosperity, abundance, succeeding, that's connected to love. So you literally have at any given moment two options, love or fear. And which one are you going to be in? That's it.
That's good. I like that. If it is a bear, I would pick fear.
As you should, so you can survive. As you should. And I think this is helpful too in conversations and debates that we get in. Like, don't make assumptions about what the other person is thinking or what they're where they're coming from. And don't take it personally. Then be impeccable with your words. What are the words that you're choosing to say back to that person? Choose fear or choose love.
I love that. That's good.
Our last one, always do your best.
Nice.
And that's all. And here's what I love that he talks about doing your best. He says your best is going to change from moment to moment. It will
that's true.
It will be different when you are healthy as opposed to sick. Under any circumstance, simply do your best and you will avoid self-judgment, self-abuse, and regret. Even with trying to follow these four agreements, do your best. Like, sometimes you're going to fall short, right?
You know what? The thing that really resonates with me that you said is that your best changes from day to day.
It does. And you're not even day to day, moment to moment.
Yeah, so my best is just laying in that bed.
And that's your best. And what we need to do is get rid of that self-abuse and regret. Again, the being impeccable with your words, because if you are feeling guilty about you staying in bed, that is something that you agree. Someone said you're being lazy and you bought into that. So don't agree to that. Agree that you are taking care of yourself in that moment.
I love that.
Like you said, your best is your best, and you can't, in that moment, you can only do what it is that you can do. And so if you, whatever it was, that was your best, and no need to, like, you know, we can be so hard on ourselves. I've learned this. There are only so many hours in a day. There are a million things that I would like to try to accomplish, but there's just literally not going to be enough time. My new to-do list, I used to Evernote for my to-do list. I switched. I now use a post-it note. If it cannot fit on a post-it note, I can't do it, right? Like, I've really limited to, like, I can maybe realistically get maybe, like, a handful of things a day. And if I didn't get it done, it wasn't. What are my top priorities? What's the number one thing I've got to get? I can get done. I can choose to get done. If I get it done, If I get it done, great. And if I don't, well, if I'm blessed enough to take another day and I survive through the night and I'm going to live another day, then I'll take care of it then. Or maybe I won't, but you know what? No big deal. And if I don't, if I die before it can happen, well, good thing I didn't spend my life worrying about this thing that I wasn't going to get done, right? Why am I...
Exactly. You know what? I have an addendum to that. There is this quotation that has been floating around the interwebs. It has been on t-shirts. It's been on mugs. I've seen it everywhere, and it pisses me off because it's going against everything that you just said. So it basically says,
she's getting you.
There are 24 hours to a day. Something where it's like you and Beyonce both have 24 hours to a day. And you know what I have to say to that? I hate that because one, we all don't have personal trainers. We all don't have nutritionists. We all don't have chefs. We all don't have nannies. We all don't have maids. We all don't have... I don't even have a fucking dishwasher. So it's one of these things where it's about you. It's about the moment you're in. It's about taking care of yourself and understanding that there is only a limitation to what you can do for yourself at that present moment. I think what you're saying is so important that we all need to just... reevaluate and recheck in with ourselves and not compare. I hate it when I hear things like that.
Being impeccable with your words or in your head. Like if I'm feeling uncomfortable about this compare, I'm agreeing to compare myself to Beyonce. Why am I gonna do that? She is living her own life.
Right.
And so again, it's sort of like reprogramming your own brain. When you then compare yourself and you say, I am not enough, because that's essentially kind of what comes out of that sentence of like that what you walk away with is I'm not enough. It's just gonna propel you to feeling
inadequate,
even more shitty going forward. So how are you going to then even unlock your limitless potential? I do believe we all have limitless potentials and great gifts and talents. So instead, you can even change the narrative on that and let that inspire you as opposed to like, you know, making you feel shittier. Like, oh, wow, Beyonce's doing great things. That means I can do great things too in my own way.
Right. It's about phrasing it and it's about language, like you just said. It's so good.
The language that we use is so important because it sets the table for the rest of these. And he says, just what you were talking about, humans punish themselves endlessly for not being what they believe they should be.
Tapped in.
They become very self-abusive and they use other people to abuse themselves as well. So it's this cycle and narrative of abuse.
Yep.
So love who you are in the exact moment, just as you are. You are both perfect and imperfect, all wrapped up in a human burrito.
Delicious.
And I, you know, so again, just going back, be impeccable with your words.
Yes.
Don't take anything personal.
Yes.
Don't make assumptions. Always do your best. And I want to leave it with this last one. Don Miguel says, every human is an artist. The dream of your life is to make beautiful art.
Ooh, look at that. All the snaps.
So go out there and make some beautiful art with with your lives and make these four positive agreements and watch your life get transformed.
It's the end of the show.
And you know it.
Yeah.
Oh, end of the show. And you know it. We'll be back next week. But first.
Tweet of the week. Tweet of the week.
Tweet it. This is just the musical segment.
I know. Just
everything's
us
a song.
Screaming in your ears. Okay. So. So I got a tweet of the week. People actually tweeted us.
Oh, it just took us threatening everybody and saying, get involved in the conversation. And then they tweeted. So that's what we got to do.
Okay, so this is from @bookgal12.
Hey, girl. Or a person.
And this person writes, @minoritycorner, as a future librarian, I am so happy you talked about research and how to be careful about bias. Hand clap emoji.
That is awesome. Thank you for getting involved in the conversation. And we are still, we were at 95
reviews. We close.
Once we get to 100, remember, we're gonna pick one of the reviewers and you're going to win a Minority Corner care package. So if you want to get involved in what that care package is or want to be a runner-up for it.
You best
no one
review.
Wants to be the runner-up. You want to be the winner. But you better, yes, like Aneke said, what'd you say, Aneke?
You best review.
Exactly. One more time for the kids in the back.
You best review.
There we go. Thank you, Jennifer Hudson.
I had to put some bass in that.
You had to, because you know what? When Jennifer Hudson sings, people listen.
It's true. She's on The Voice.
That's why she does it.
She is on The Voice.
So I have two quick ones that I thought were really fun.
Okay.
One is from Bodet of Rockport 517.
Okay.
Listen to this goofy pair talk about pop culture and politics while giggling, mispronouncing stuff, and just having the best time.
You know what? That's the truth.
I feel like that should just be the tagline of our show.
Giggling and mispronouncing things. Two goofy people.
You know what? Might use that. We might use that in an ad coming
up. Two goofs. So. I like that.
Yeah, two goofs. We could. Yeah. Okay. I got an idea. Okay. You know, I just want to read just that one. That was fun.
That was fun. I like that one. Thank you for the review. That was awesome. Oh, we have an announcement.
Oh, yes, we do. Da, 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 da.
New member of the team.
Minority Corner just expanded. There were two, and now there is three. We have a new editor.
Yes.
And is there a doctor on the team, Aneke?
I believe so. There is a Dr. Tara Dunderdale, PhD, up in this business. Ooh.
Because you know if we were going to get an editor, we had to go straight to the top.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to also thank you to the other people who submitted edits for us. We appreciated all
thank
of it.
You
guys are wonderful people. We are so thankful and lucky to have a community out there that supports us like we do.
Yes. We are just growing the team one corner kid at a time. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the corner kids, we got a Minority Corner Kids playground. I said it right.
Yay.
That's on Facebook.
Join it.
Get involved in the conversation there. That's it. Just join it. We also on the Twitters.
Minority Corner with a K. Keep tweeting us.
Keep tweet. That's it. But you know what? And I can guess what I got to go do?
You got to go run that 10K.
No. Well, I'm doing that. But before that, I have to go. I don't know if you know this. I am a master baker. I have to go bake some fucking. We're filming the Thanksgiving episode of Thwip.
Oh, cute.
And I'm making Captain America marble brownies.
Ooh.
So it represents, they're going to be black and white brownies. So it's both the black Captain America and the white Captain America.
Or Winter Soldier, because isn't Winter Soldier kind of monochromatic?
Not my Captain America.
Oh,
not mine.
Oh,
Bucky Barnes, you be the Winter Soldier. You, not mine. Sam Wilson and Steve Rogers are my Captain Americas.
Okay.
That's it.
I hit a nerve. And on that, I think we should let James go to the kitchen.
I gotta go to the kitchen. I am a master baker, and I'm gonna be listening to Anita Baker, and I'm off.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Ooh, I'm baking them brownies. Ooh, I'm baking them brownies.
In celeb news this week, the hosts of Lady to Lady took a break from hanging with today's hottest comedians, actors, and writers to sell a sex machine. What'd they do with all that cash?
Rent a party bus to go to Magic Mike Live in Vegas, of course. All of this on the heels of a salacious sizzler session with Home Alone 4-star French Stewart.
Want to know what the f*** we're talking about? Tune into Lady to Lady whenever, wherever you listen to podcasts. Can you keep a secret? Neither can we.
Ben, we've been accused of so many things over the course of making The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast that we're a little bit embarrassed to be making.
The embarrassment lies squarely on us, and you can listen anonymously and safely.
Would you like to meet up for some anonymous podcast listening?
This is a podcast you definitely won't want your parents to find on your phone when you pass away suddenly. Discovered by an innocent hotel maid.
They'll make up something else at your funeral. Something more tasteful, like you were listening to Bullseye.
We, of course, have permanently shamed ourselves by making this podcast and putting our real names on it, but you don't have to.
It's a regret we feel several times a week.
Subscribe and delete The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast. Yes, we are actually making a Star Trek podcast.
We should submit that one.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.